PHP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, my golfing friends, to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me this week is Gavin Deer from ShotScope. He is the chief commercial officer and is an entire pond away from me right now. The power of the internet. Gavin, welcome to Off Course.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, the one thing that everyone will realize fairly quickly is you're a lot more fun to listen to talk. So I think between the accent and the knowledge you have on your brand, we're going to try and steer it that way a little bit. But ShotScope is definitely doing some great things. We've got the V3 with performance tracking flowing ravenously through THP right now. I'm sure you've seen a little bit of spike in rounds, including one round for me yesterday. How is the company looking right now? Is it trajectories or projections good? The trajectory is positive?
Yeah, and a bit. You know, we've just recently gone through 150 million shots recorded. That's the sort of, okay, it's seasonal, so we're taking a dip just now. You know, there's only certain locations in the world that people are playing proper golf, is what I call, compared to the winter golf in Scotland. But in the summer, I mean, it was nuts. We were doing a million shots a week. I would fully expect by the time we roll into next spring, it'll be a couple million shots a week, going from strength to strength. And, you know, it's just good fun. That's the main thing. You know, all half our company of 20 is golfers, and everybody just has good fun, you know, and I've been really pleased with how we've managed to sort of integrate with the Hackers Paradise community as well. So many guys have taken on V3, and, you know, I'm a forum member commenting a bit, and, you know, it's educated conversation, and it's good fun.
Yeah. So I don't know if you remember, we were actually, I think at
Nona.
Lake Nona, yeah.
Feels a long time ago that does.
You had shown up, and we were hanging out at a table in the back waiting for a presentation from Tour Edge, I believe. And you had some bands with you, and we're all kind of like, yeah, okay. We see the value here. What I didn't realize is there's a whole bunch going on in those bands, obviously, to improve the accuracy of the unit. But yeah, that was like, you came in, you know, the jumper with, you know, the bands inside it. You're like, let me show you the secret stuff here. And, you know, that's been almost 2 years now, I think, since that PGA
show.
Yeah,
that was January 2020. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, wow, what a whirlwind of 2 years. And lo and behold, just now, based on the fact that Budget just hooked us up with a great Budget Golf, gave us a nice discount, I am officially a part of the performance tracking team on ShotScope. First round in there yesterday. It sounds like you've been looking me up a little bit.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a look. I actually looked at your raw data rather than the sort of finished round. Mm. Mainly because it gives me a little bit of insight. You know, our support team can go in there and have a look if we need to try and see how to improve data collection, or there's a tag missing, or, you know, anything. Could be new tees. We can see exactly how you've played, how it's collected. You don't see that. You see the process data, which is good. But what the raw data means is I kind of have to see between the sort of things. I can't quite work out what one. It looks like you might have hit a 9-iron into the water.
Yeah, we're not talking about that one.
So I can see a few things.
Yeah, so I think it's a good opportunity because there are a lot of people out there who have somehow not found out about V3 and performance tracking. I've used a couple different GPS watches in the past, and my biggest complaint has always been the bulk of it. And I mean, there's not a ton of bells and whistles when you take a look at V3 overall, but it also, I think, has allowed you guys to create a unit that's not obnoxious on your wrists. And the one thing I've worn for a while now is an Apple Watch, and I definitely don't think the V3 is any more intrusive to my golf game or my life in general just by wearing it. That I would say that right off the bat, that's the first thing I noticed. Is that the form factor that had to have been, had to have played a role in your decision making for the unit itself?
Yeah, well, for anyone listening that doesn't know our history, we started off with a V1 and it didn't have a screen. It just did performance tracking, no distances. And it looked like it had been made in a shed out back. You know, okay. it was pretty hard. I mean, amazing we sold them. And then our V2, we managed to put a screen on, but we had challenges and it ended up being a pretty big. So we knew that we had a solid product in V2, but the size was incorrect. So again, you start looking at form factor when building V3. And our guys did a great job of reducing the size. I mean, they almost halved the V2 for size. And some of that is reducing the necessary battery capability, because obviously battery is a huge part in the size of a watch. And effectively what then happened was you end up with something that's got a good form factor, but also it's incredibly light. Comes in at sort of 42 grams, which is really light. So golfers don't notice. And that's the key. You know, it's got to be comfortable.
Yeah.
Not intrusive, like you say.
But then you also have the bands, which I have in front of me right now. The one thing I really liked is it feels like it has a little bit of stretch to it and is more supportive. I've always worn the sort of wrap around once and then wrap tight watch band because I don't want something bouncing around on my arm, especially when I'm golfing. And the one thing I noticed and I was very concerned about is you have a lot of locations to latch on, and it's not like, you know, the traditional 1.2.3.4. There's actually a lot, almost like a step system where you can get a very customized fit there. That was a big deal for me. And coming into it, aside from the fact that I'm terrified of data, the other thing that I was worried about is, will I actually be satisfied having this watch on my arm? And as it turns out, I actually wore it until, so my round yesterday was at 12:30 and I wore it until I took it off at 11. I didn't even realize I still had it on. And that is a big deal for me. That is a huge deal, you know, because in the past, these big watches, the first thing I do when I'm done is take the darn thing off.
So there's a couple of things when you're talking about the strap. So the strap has got technology inside of it. So the straps are a certain size. They're silicone, which allows them to be a little bit more stretchy. We have some of the holes in place just for breathability.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things we hear a lot is, well, I'll just use my Fitbit or I'll just use my Apple Watch on the golf course. Well, a dedicated golf GPS watch takes a bit of a battering on a golf course. I mean, you know, you're hitting out of rough, you're hitting into hard, firm ground when you're taking divots. So there needs to be a sort of an element of strength in the straps. And I think when you compare the dedicated GPS golf watches compared to sort of smart watches or sports watches and other forms, that you can see a difference in the straps because of that. So
interesting. Yeah, it was definitely surprising to me, but let's talk about the performance overall. And I want to give you guys a little grief right out of the way. I have a 3-iron and you do not have you. I had to use the X1. I was almost feeling like you guys are like, hey, Dan, you're not, so, you should not be hitting a 3-iron.
Things you won't know. So early on in V2, we made 20 tags, right? And 3-iron was one of them. 5-wood was another. And then we did an X3 and an X4. And what we found was less than 1% of people use the 3-iron.
Yeah.
And so it just came to a point of, you know, we're making these tags and it's no one uses it. So occasionally we get the guy that's like, I've got a 3-iron in the bag. What do I do? And I'm like, well, you do what I do. And I use my X1 tag the same. Mm-hmm. So
what's great about that is you can actually go into your app and then assign it a golf club. That's the first thing I did. As I fumbled around learning how to edit the round, here's what I like to do, Gavin. When I get something new, the last thing I do is learn about it before I use it. You know, I don't want to have any assumptions. I don't want to learn any of the tricks. I like to learn as I go. And that was the best part of getting after it and saying like, oh, this is a really great feature. And one of the things is you can pick, unless you're a psychopath and change clubs every round. And I'm not saying there aren't THPers who do that because there are, you can say X1 is this club. And then you can have confidence when you go look at the data, it's going to say it's that club, which is super cool.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the My Bag feature allows you, effectively, you could use any tag. All the tags are individualized with a sort of imprint for driver or three wood or three iron or, well, not three iron, four iron, five iron. But you could take a driver tag and put it in a lob wedge and change it internally in the system. Or you could take a three wood and make it a sand wedge. So it's got all that functionality. The only tag that has to remain as a putter tag because it actually puts the watch into a slightly different setting when you walk onto the green.
Okay. So let's talk about the putter one a little bit, because there are a lot of people out there who say I use a unique putter, I have a unique grip. You've obviously had to solve for that. And I actually saw in the conversation going on THP right now, like, what do? I have a super stroke. You know what? Let's just put it out there right now. How did you guys solve for that?
So we had a good look at different options, to the point of actually maybe in the 2019 PGA show where we went around every putter company and looked at all of their difference. And there is no everybody's top of our counterbalance is individual. There's no way to create a master system that would attach to them all.
Yeah.
And the only way to potentially do it would be to use a magnet. Well, a magnet would affect our field from the watch talking to the tag.
Mm-hmm.
So what we actually did was quite simple. We just cut the threads off the tags. So instead of screwing them in, create some adhesive on the bottom and you can just stick it on. So I've seen it mentioned quite a lot. It is mentioned a lot. So anybody can hop on, they can purchase a set of three tags. A couple come without a thread, one comes with a thread, and they can attach them that way. Or there's a secondary option. You can use manual putting. So you can take a tag off, and a lot of that was in place for belly putters or really long putters. Because obviously, you're going to grip it in a different, I'm now showing you on a podcast, but you're going to grip it away from the tag, right? So it can't, the tag can't talk that far. You know, we've got a limit on the distance. So manual putting allows you to effectively click a button to say, I'm in this location for a putt. I'm in this location for an next putt. And it works. And we see a real mix of people use different methods. You know, and that was the main thing. We kind of feel like we've covered off all the options with the sort of the normal way, the counterbalance putter way, and then the manual putting.
Well, what I liked about the putting, aside from the fact that I've got terrible memory, and I actually think I either got all 18 where I actually picked the number of putts I had, or I missed one. I can't remember. I think I missed one, and then people were playing in behind us, and I clicked it like right at the back of the green, and that I had two putts and just edit it later. Like, I'll deal with it later.
Yeah.
But you know, it's nice that it's automatically there. You pick your putt, you don't really stress about it too much, and then you move on. That seems like a super easy way of getting the putting right, as long as everything else has been done accurately to that point. Is there any feedback there, or is there a way to possibly change that, or how much did you take into account what you're dealing with there? Because you have 1, 2, 3, and obviously,
I don't know. Yes.
Other.
So you can click. You effectively. So what we're talking about is pin click. So if you walk onto a green, we know you're on a green, and we offer 1, 2, and 3. You can click to the next screen that gives you 0 and 4. And what we're asking the golfer to do, if they've taken 2 shots with the putter, and I'll say it this way and explain why. Then when you get the ball at the hole, you click 2. And that does 2 things. It tells us how many putts we're looking for on that green. And it tells us the location of the flag.
Mm-hmm.
And we're probably about 95% at recognizing the putts without you touching it, but we don't know where the flag is.
Yeah.
So we kind of need something. So it's a great way of combining two pieces of information for the system in one click. It takes a little bit of getting used to, I would say. I'm now in the strange situation of, if I don't wear the watch, I'm trying to click a button that doesn't exist on my hand, getting the ball at the hole. So the reasons I said earlier that it's two shots with the putter on the hole is it's irrelevant of whether you've used the putter on the green or off the green. The system will know that. It's just looking for a putter tag. Where it then finds it will say, well, that was on the fringe. That goes into your short game. It's not a putt, but it's looking for the shots with the putter tag. It's got into a situation where it's a pretty good solution. You can do it the opposite way, totally dismiss it, move on, and the system will take the backup route of putting the pin in the middle of the green and saying, we think that you had two putts there. We think you had one putt there, and you can go and edit it afterwards. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of do the two ways. Most people get into the swing of using pin collect after a couple of holes. Like you say, now and again, you'll forget one. You can click it somewhere else, and then you can edit it afterwards. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it's super easy. And I don't like the fact that you isolated that I didn't hole out from anywhere because I didn't realize there was a zero putt feature. So thanks a lot for, you know, knocking me down a peg. It is December here, so I don't expect that much.
Hey, at least you're not looking for the four putts.
Oh, fair play. Yeah. Actually, putting game was pretty good yesterday. So, I enjoyed my time with it. I had a little bit of variances, and we should talk about this because there are people out there who will be concerned between the accuracy of the device, which seemed to be very, very good from my perspective, looking over the round afterwards, but then just the pure ability to pick up a stroke. I had experienced a couple. How often are you seeing feedback from users that maybe a tag isn't so great, or for me, it was one club. What's it like for most golfers, especially when you guys get feedback?
Yeah, we get the odd one. I wouldn't say it's so it's interesting in your experience. So what we will then ask you to do is there's a setting on the watch that says read tag in settings.
Okay.
And it will display. So I don't know, did you have the screen on that shows you the tag when it's been read?
I don't think so.
No. See, this is where reading the instructions is really useful.
That's asking a lot, Gavin. That's asking a lot.
You can't always get one of the experts on a podcast the day after. So what we've got is we've got a couple of things. So we've actually got a screen. So you can put it into a screen setting that will show you the front, middle, back distances. Everything stays the same, but a little box appears on the side corner and says, I've read a driver tag, I've read a 6-iron tag. Mm-hmm. So you know the shots, the tag has been located.
Yeah, right? I saw that for sure.
So that's a good system. So for the 58, did you have the lob wedge tag in it?
Yes.
Okay. So I've seen lob wedges get picked up in your round. So the tag is working. So therefore, what we just need to go and do is find out why the few shots that you hit, it missed.
Okay.
So in general, I'd say that's pretty uncommon. What I would say is we've got a support team of 5. These guys have got access to all these tools that I'm looking at just now. They hop on. They're brilliant at giving feedback, information of how to improve data collection if you need it, or how to get more out of the system.
Okay. And then obviously you have that extra tag if you just don't feel confident in one of your features, and you could reassign X2 and it can become a lob wedge, or since I don't believe in fairway woods, my 3-wood could be my lob wedge, you know. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, you can do a multiple of things. Or to be honest, the guys quite happily send you a new lob wedge tag if it wasn't working.
Well, so let's talk about one of my biggest fears about shot tracking, and I've always, I mean, you're a great golfer, Gavin. It's no secret that you can move a ball around a golf course pretty well. But my past has always been to have the shortest memory possible on the worst shots you hit. Whereas in ShotScope, this isn't my first run with performance tracking. The last time around, I was like, if I hit a bad one, the next time that club's in my hand, I feel stressed. Like, I've got to get a good one this time. Otherwise, this thing's going to go way down in the depth chart, you know, whatever it may be. For a lot of people, you're tracking your average number to get a baseline to know what you need from a certain distance. For some people, it seems like it's a bit of a different chase. You want to optimize. Your goal is to make it look as good as possible, which includes the absolutely atrocious driver swing I had on 18 that hit a tree 130 yards from the tee box and is officially registered in there. When it comes to this is such a silly thing, but it's, you know, it's a very golfer minded thing. Performance tracking as a reminder, you know, the lack of ability to short memory. I did see in the features you have a performance setting for like an optimal performance setting for each club, if that's correct. And then you have just your basic overall average. I know that was a lot to throw at you with my own personal mental demons in place, but come at it from every direction you can and just give me an idea what performance tracking should and would do for your average golfer, any day golfer.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's the biggest misnomer that we face and the other companies involved in performance tracking face is the guy signing at the Country Club because performance tracking is not for me. I'm not a serious golfer. I play off 22. It's not for me. And I actually sit there and go, you play off 22. I think a performance tracking system could get you off 17 without doing much. You know, I think that's the level of shots one of these systems can save. You're right. So the sort of personal being so invested in each shot and worrying about the outcome. That's an interesting side. I mean, the way once you start collecting data at a good rate, one poor shot has such a limited effect on your averages that it's nothing to worry about per se. But really what performance tracking is trying to look for is we're just looking for trends. We're looking for, hey, you hit your 7-iron and your 6-iron the same distance. You might want to go to your local PGA Pro and get the lofts checked. You know, it could be that simple. Or, hey, you know, you're missing out because you're not using a fairway wood. You might say, well, I don't want to use a fairway wood. And you go, that's fine. But the system says you're missing out. Or it could be, hey, around the greens, you know, I've got the data in front of me. What do you play off?
Right now, I'm about a 2.
A 2, okay. Let me look at scratch then. We're actually doing an exercise internally, so we're pulling out all the data.
Okay.
So, for instance, so I'll explain the difference between average and performance average. So, average for club distances is just every shot over 50 yards away from the flag put into a bundle. So, that includes chip-outs with an 8-iron, it includes everything. Our performance average removes about 70% of all the shots you hit. And we're looking for a number that represents a good swing and a good strike. And we're pretty good at that. And you'll find after 10 rounds, you'll start to look at these numbers and go, wow, that is what I think I hit a 7-iron, or that's what I hit a 6-iron. So, you know, we're looking at things with data. How can data affect? Well, we know if you're more aggressive off the tee, you're more likely to make a birdie. So in scale of numbers, for a scratch golfer, the average distance of our scratch golfers when they make a birdie off the tee is 259 yards. When they make a bogey, it's 239 yards. So you can start to see little insights. And it may be, let me have a look at short game because it's a great way of doing it. So shots, okay. Our scratch golfers using a pitching wedge, they are 38.2% likely to get inside 6 feet of the hole. If they use a putter from off the green, 77.6. Now, you're going to sit there and people will come back and go, well, it's most likely different lie types. You couldn't always use a putter from where a pitching wedge is, and go, I accept that. But what I'm trying to do is say, well, hey, how many times do we go out to a golf club and you see the guy who's just missed the green short on the fairway and he's got a pitching wedge or a lob wedge out? He could putt that. We're just trying to make small incremental changes to how you make decisions around a golf course. And what we can do is add all of those up. The other interesting side is, once you've got the data, I mean, we are just scratching the surface with what we can do. You know, we're looking at some strategy builders over the next 6 months that you can go and take your data and sort of put it into our course mapping tool to build great strategies of what you should be doing and overlay that into your app. So you've got effectively a yardage book. So there's so much that you can do from performance data that in reality, I think in 4 years' time, you'll be sitting there telling your buddies, well, I've done this for 4 years now. And they'll be going, well, actually, I have to do this. It's kind of the way the world of golf will move.
Okay. So I think the things that bounced around in my head, so I had a severe upslope on a par four and I had about 110. So I pulled my gap wedge, which is about 125 for me, and did exactly what you'd expect on an upslope. Got a little bit behind the ball, killed the loft. It went a mile in the air and landed short in the bunker. But that wasn't so bad because I had a couple other shots with my gap wedge. The one that really stuck out to me was I hit my 54 degree once yesterday and it was out of the slop in like the cut down heather from 110 yards. And I think it went 60 yards. So my performance on my 54 is going to need to improve, but that gives you an example. Like I looked at it and I laughed like, God, that's awful. But then I realized like, no, it's not, it's one shot. And you know, the idea here is quantity and then quality comes with it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, here's some of the data that I can throw. So 50 to 110 yards for a scratch golfer, right? They are, let me have a look. Average, what am I looking for? Yeah. Average proximity from the fairways, 22 feet. Average proximity from the roughs, 29 feet. So your 54 is going to be a lot higher than that. But you're talking of such a small data set.
Yeah.
That in 15 rounds, you'll look back and that shot will just be merged into all the, against all the good shots and all the different shots. So it's just getting out there and tracking, really.
Yeah. And that was kind of the joke I had with myself internally is like, oh man, that's really going to drive my one number down. But the reality was one number. And I think I kind of felt like I was getting over the hump a little bit faster than I'd expected. By the time I was on the 17th hole, it was kind of like, yeah, whatever. And then, of course, you bring up my water ball, which was on 17. Now, this is an interesting question I have for you. In the app, and maybe I wasn't paying enough attention, when you're editing, can you pick where the ball landed?
Yes.
For the shot distance on each one? I don't know that it's something I did at that point because I was busy trying to add in the extra shot. And I don't think it picked up my lob wedge on that hole. So when it comes to that, you know, I almost cleared the water, but I also had, I was hitting into wind. So it's not going to be a great number, but you can edit to the point of entry.
Yes. And to be and on the watch, if you wanted to add a drop in on the watch, you can actually do that on the golf course.
Okay.
It's in the menu settings. Or for instance, if you hit one out of bounds, you can hit a provisional. It'll then give you a timer to go and look for it.
Those are called mulligans here.
Gavin. Yeah, well, that's it. It's slightly different. But all the capabilities on the watch. I think the other side for me with the V3 is it's doing all of that data collection whilst providing you the distances.
Mm-hmm.
So what we find is, you know, guys that go out and play scrambles here or they're playing match play, they're not collecting data, but they're still wearing the watch because it's integral to playing on the course that day by giving distances. So it's almost two products in one in that effect.
So what we haven't talked about yet is rangefinders, and obviously yep. you guys do have that performance. So one thing I was thinking about, I'm like, man, this would be a pretty insane thing to integrate, would be the tracking with hitting the pin with a rangefinder. But there's so many components there that just flat out won't work, I'm assuming. When it comes to rangefinders though, are you one of those guys who uses both, or you just get the watch going and you're good?
So I use both, and I sounds bad. I probably start using the rangefinder when I get within about 150, 160 yards.
Okay. Why does that sound bad?
Because I used to be more accurate than I am now. It's probably the reason. But I remember having a bit of an epiphany on the middle of a fairway in a medal round. I can tell you that hole, it's the seventh hole at Prestonfield, the par five. And I had like 182. And I'm standing there going, six is too much, seven isn't enough. Oh, what am I going to do? And in reality, I sort of thought afterwards, well, the pin's front half of the green. If I'd known the number to the front and only used the watch in this location, I probably would have hit a better shot, because I'm trying to hit it 182 rather than accepting my seven iron goes 177 and take it, I'll be 5 yards short. Trying to be too precise.
Hmm.
So in reality, for me, it's now a case of when I get within about 150, when I get maybe about an eight iron inwards or something, I start to look at it a bit more.
Get a little bit more greedy about the number you're pulling.
A bit, yes.
So I'm not going to torment you on the what's in the bag, because we already know it's ancient technology that you've already been heckled on THP Live for a little bit. But let's talk about the amount of golf you play, because I don't think it's enough. I know you got a little one at home. You're telling me that the PGA show is the likely timing for your next legitimate round get back into golf round. Man, what is up with that? Because you're a strong player. You play off a very low cap. You've been known to play some great golf. How are you entering that part of your life? What's it like?
It's weird. I mean, I love playing golf in shorts, but obviously being in Scotland, it doesn't really add up. I don't get that many opportunities to do that. So the minute we hit winter, I mean, the golf courses here, it's cold. They've got winter greens out there, or it could be played on full greens, but they haven't cut them for 2 weeks because there's no growth. It's just not that appetizing to go and play in a 30-mile-per-hour wind when it's cold and you're wearing four layers. So a lot of my winters are wait for the PGA show, play five or six rounds in a week, and then start playing again in, goodness me, start of April. And this year, bizarrely, this is a lot of information. My wife and I sold our house. We moved in with my parents for what was meant to be 4 months, turns into 8 months, how house building goes. But it's where I grew up, and the course I'm an honorary member at is a mile up the road. And so I started playing like three times a week. And I'm going, okay, I'm playing for the team in the local matches. And I played through April, and I was pretty average. And all of a sudden in May, it was like something switched. And it's like, wow, there's five under, there's four under, there's five under. And it was just playing enough golf. You know, I don't practice, So it really got into a sort of period where you're like, okay, I kind of know a bit more what to do again to get into a bit of a better level. So I know we've got the data experience in May 2022. So yeah, I'm hoping to be in pretty good position by that time it rolls around. But winters are tough. Winters are really tough.
Yeah, over here in Ohio, it's not. I mean, I don't think we get the wet. We get more cold than wet, I would say. But I actually played yesterday. It was 56 degrees, 58 degrees Fahrenheit, which was very nice. I was in a fairly thin jacket, which wasn't, you know, the worst thing in the world to be wearing playing golf in December. I call that a win, but yeah. So you've got a nice history in golf. Is there anything that really stands out in your career as a very exceptional experience or a part of the time in your golfing career was like the highlight of your playing?
So I played my best golf 2008 through 2010 probably. So in that time, I was part of the team with Scotland that won the World Amateur Championships. So we won that in Australia, three-man team. We were ahead of the US team by 11. And that was Ricky Fowler, Jamie Lovemark, and Billy Horschel. So, good names. Probably one of my best friends. So I went to college in Boca, South Florida. And in early 2009, I went back out there, and they've got a sort of elite amateur event, the Dixie Amateur, and it was at Heron Bay. And I shot 62 in the second round. I lipped out from 30 feet on the last for 61. And I remember walking off, and one of my friends was there. It's like, wow, I was unlucky. I was like, yeah, it was for 61. And he just looked at me like, okay, low score is 69, Gav, so far. And I'm like, yeah, well, I'm 62. And then the next day, it was really windy, and I shot 67. And I don't think anybody broke par. And I was so far out in front that it was just weird. There was just a period of time where it's like, you know, really settled in and played some really good golf.
I'm impressed you survived Australia. I was watching, I think it was on Facebook the other day, and saw a bunch of videos of the different insects and animals that don't mess around over there.
So we were, I mean, the coach Ian Ray, who was sort of Scottish golf coach, he was great at planning trips. So it was 72 hole team event, three guys. We were all the same age going down. We'd all been to college in the States. We went down to Sydney for 10 days because obviously it's a huge flight. And we actually played all the top courses in Sydney in a week. And then we flew over to Adelaide where the World Amateurs works at Royal Adelaide and the Grange. And we sort of played the practice rounds, but we had such a great preparation. And obviously, you know, Sydney and Adelaide are, they're not the outback. You don't meet any of the strange stuff. But I don't like snakes. I don't like spiders. You know, I'm not going in the water because there might be something there. But I learned that all in Florida at the same time.
Yeah, true. You're fighting the gators down there. Was there a place in the world that you would say that you've played that stands out from everywhere else from a quality experience or just golf in general?
So, I mean, I went and I then played Challenge Tour. So Challenge Tour, we go to Colombia, Kenya, South Africa, India, Kazakhstan, Russia. I used to live in Morocco in the winters, played a lot of golf in Morocco. Stunning place to go and play golf. A lot of new courses. Kazakhstan, the course was exceptional. The only issue I've got is when you're on sort of tour, you rock up to these locations and the golf course is there and you play there. I can't tell you the name of any of the golf courses for the best part. I could almost describe the you know, the holes to you, but I couldn't tell you the name.
Well, yeah, that's the funny part as golfers, right? You can't remember what you had for dinner two nights ago, but you remember right. Every single shot of the round you had last weekend, you know.
That's right, absolutely. And you know, there's nice places that aren't so great. I mean, Scandinavia's got some phenomenal golf courses. You know, I really enjoyed the Moroccan golf courses, very different places, different cities and with different types of golf courses. Australia's got good memories. Yeah, you know, it's point me to a golf course and I'm quite happy.
Yeah, I think we need a whole nother podcast just to hear about the exploits of Gavin traveling the world, playing golf, dominating the field, including current professional golfers who you might recognize as.
Yeah, well, there's maybe not as much domination as you think, but I certainly traveled a lot. I've got that one down.
Is there a post-round drink that always tickles your fancy?
Well, so that, I stopped drinking about 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay.
And obviously, coming across the college in America, you know, at 18, we did a lot of drinking in Scotland. And then obviously it kind of, it's not so much beaten out of you in college in the States, but as sort of athletes, it was more the fact in Florida, you couldn't recover. So if you went out drinking, you just, the next day was a write-off. You couldn't function in the humidity. So that, and then as a sort of elite or professional golfer, I just didn't drink because I couldn't practice at the level that I wanted to. So yeah, for me, I was always soft drinks, Iron Brew, which is the Scottish equivalent of Coke or Coca-Cola or something like that.
Okay. That's, yeah, it doesn't always have to be alcoholic. Now, I support it very much, but yeah, it's funny, in it's obvious, it's different everywhere you go and the experiences you have. In the warm summers here in Ohio, you get kind of smacked with a bit of humidity, and by the time I'm done playing golf, I'm definitely not drinking while I'm out there. And then I get inside and like all I want is this particular beverage, and rarely, especially if it's like I'm playing at, you know, 12 o'clock in the afternoon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon, the last thing I want to do is start hammering some alcohol. So yeah, that, get me that soft drink. And I'm more of a Diet Coke kind of guy, but yeah, give me like a lot of that and then we'll move on with the rest of our day instead of having to go take a nap.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the thing. And to be honest, I mean, you know, in Scotland, I think a lot of people's view of Scotland is guys are either playing golf or drinking. Well, with the drink laws here for driving, you know, it's effectively cut. So nobody drinks after they play golf here anymore. Totally different culture to 10, 15 years ago.
Interesting. You're wrecking some of the assumptions that people have. I was under the impression you had to drink to play golf in Scotland because of the weather.
They've got great selections in the clubhouse. If you're a visitor, it's fine. But yeah, I mean, you can't effectively have a drink here and drive anymore. So with the golf courses being out with the towns for the most part, it just makes it difficult.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, man, it's been a pleasure having you on today, getting some in-depth training on my V3. It was, kind of cheating getting the man behind the mask here for that. But any truth to the rumor that the blue watch is actually significantly better than the red one?
No, but what I will say to you is we have got 58 left of the blue watch worldwide.
Wow. Well, I went gray because budget did not have one of those 58. But it's cool you guys sell the bands as well on your website for anyone who needs a replacement or wants a little bit of variety. Are they tough to change with the antenna built into it?
No, to be honest, I don't actually have one here for you. Are you going to be at the PGA show this year?
Probably not, no.
Probably not. Okay. I'll maybe send you over one and you can sort of go through the experience of changing one.
Okay.
It's actually they disconnect really easily with a screwdriver and they kind of pop out and then you just pop them in and reattach.
Super easy. Well, that's what golfers need to know. And especially with the way we treat our stuff, you know, surely people will be, even though I think these are quite durable with the stretch they have. Nice that you get the ability to match your shoelaces with your watch, with your hat, with your belt, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So more colors coming in the future, or is that?
I don't think so. I mean, with the stuff that we've got, new products coming out next year. They're not watches. I don't think we'll do more colors. I mean, we've got spare straps available. We get the odd question, but it's just complicated to go and make an orange strap. You know, for everybody that wants an orange one, somebody wants a green one, and it's never ending. So it's just not that simple with some of the technology inside of it.
So new product coming next year, GPS golf shoes. It's going to be a real thing here, Gavin. You heard it from Gavin first.
That's right.
Do you have any questions for me today?
Not, I mean, to be honest, I'd be interested to get more feedback on the watch from you and in time. I think you probably need to go and read the instructions a bit, get a bit more aware.
Yeah, that's the plan.
But to be honest, I'm just delighted that I really enjoy the interaction with the community. That, you know, that's the cool thing for me. We're picking up ideas. We've got our own internal communications at the company. So I'm chucking in, hey, look at this. This someone said this idea. Someone's put this in. You know, it's great. And it's nice to be involved in a culture. And hopefully, as we go into next year, we'll get more and more THPers on the system. And we can start showing everybody else our data and our good shots and our bad shots. And at the end of the day, everybody should improve. And if they get a different way of enjoying golf, you know, that's cool as well.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I bought into it for twofold. Number one, pure curiosity. And number two, there seems to be a real drive for that interest on THP. And it's going to be fun to grow with that little community in the community that's being built there. It was nice. You guys did a clubhouse for us. And yeah, I'm going to be gunning for some folks, probably you too, even though I got a couple months to prep, it sounds like, to get back into form. Either way, I look forward to having you again on the website, talking about the product. You can find Gavin, you can find ShotScope on social at Twitter, at ShotScope, Instagram, shot_scope, obviously shotscopes.com. And Gavin will be on THP answering questions for anyone who has them for the V3 and their other devices. So, hey, thanks again. Enjoy the holidays. I hope you have fun. Maybe you get one or two good days of weather you can go play.
No, I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on. Cheers.
Glad to. Anyone else out there playing golf this weekend, have a great time. It is December, so if you're in a neck of the woods that doesn't typically allow for it, get out and play. I'll talk to you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.